Checking back in with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for what's become kind of a weekly update, Tacky. This is our new way of communicating.
Well, it's good to see you as always, Joe. Always good to see a friendly face. And of course, welcome to our humble abodes in our living room and our dens and running public hearings from your house. It's different. But, you know, always appreciate a chance to talk to you. And, you know, this actually creates some degree of normality in our lives by doing this.
Yeah, no, I think it's important to keep to some kind of a routine, whether it's at home or at work. I've actually started to go back into the office on a very limited basis at QATV. I know that this was the first week of the governor's phased reopening. How are you hearing it's going?
I think there's a lot of frustration still by a lot of businesses, especially those who have to reconfigure themselves for curbside pickup, telephone orders, online payments, things like that. A different way of doing business. Some of the very small businesses do not do that. It's a browsing business. You have to walk in and see what you get or what you want to get. That opportunity is taken away from folks at the moment regarding the non-entry at this point still on retail stores. I've noticed in Ralston, where I'm at, that the restaurants have that had not done takeout in the past have started doing some takeout. Most likely in anticipation of potential reopening of restaurants June 8th, which there is no commitment yet, just to let people know that that's going to happen by the governor. But, you know, clearly there's some interest on at least getting your businesses somewhat restarted through takeout. So if you have not gotten takeout in a while and you're curious if your restaurant that you enjoy has open for takeout, it actually now's a good time to check in and give them a phone call and see where they are as they start to try to figure out if they can reopen it in a new normal. I do want to remind everyone, the state of emergency is not over. The governor has not ended the state of emergency, which means the governor's police powers under the law is still in effect. So mask wearing, social distancing recommendation, and all the other guidelines they put out is still in effect, including the no gatherings bigger than 10 requirement. So as we do our phase reopening, doesn't mean the emergency powers are over. And it's actually part of his emergency powers on the phase reopening process. So we don't have a time frame really still on when this ends. It's still as play as we go, trial and error. Unfortunately, I hate to say trial and error in something like this, but it is, and we'll try our best as we move along.
Yeah, even he has admitted that the data and the science and the very smart people that he talks about are the ones that are kind of, you know, dictating how this will proceed.
That's correct. I think you've figured out, I think some of the people listening figured out I spend way too much time on the news and science journals and watching educational stuff on TV about COVID and what's going on in other parts of the world, how they're handling the COVID situation. And one of our conference calls among House members we can't do a full caucus because you can't have 100 of us sitting in a phone call and be constructive. You know, smaller caucuses of 20, it's much easier to conduct a conversation. And one of the concerns the health experts have brought up is heavy breathing. You can project your respiratory fluids 15 feet away when you're breathing very heavily. So if you're running, you're exerting yourself, as you exhale, you can, you know, blow your respiratory fluids very far away. Also, you're breathing heavy, which means you're bringing more air, which improves your odds on picking up something. So I know there's been a talk by Mayor Walsh about runners, and people want to go back to the gym. We've seen stories that are in the news. But I hope people that are listening realize that it is some common sense here. If you breathe harder, you're taking in more air, then you're pushing harder air out than you normally do, which means that if you are infected, you could spread the disease further around you. And open air won't matter because of the 15-foot distance and the exertion of your lungs. Plus, if the wind blows the wrong way, you know, it's someone else nearby will contract it. So if you're running by somebody on the street, for example, you feel, well, it's going to be very quick. It won't take long. Well, that's not true. You're exerting an enormous amount of air in your lungs, and you're exerting a lot of air in. So if I'm in your breathing space as you're running by, and you're inhaling the wrong moment, and I'm infected, you're going to get infected. So the social distance thing, particularly people that are going to exercise pretty heavily, just be mindful of more distance, because moving quickly does not save you from being infected. I think there's a myth going on around that.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. You know, we've seen just today, actually, a resurgence reported in South Korea, where they had kind of been held up as the model for containing this thing. So it's really still pretty unpredictable, I think.
And moving into the summertime, South Korea actually has a very similar weather pattern to we do. There's a little quirk because their Arctic air current is actually coming out of the Siberian area. So they have a slightly different weather pattern in terms of dry air and snow. But in terms of the rest of the weather, it's actually very similar to ours. So it's actually pretty fascinating because, you know, that one person spread to 100 people, and the rough estimate somewhere between 2.5 to perhaps up to 3 people can be infected by one person. So it gives the idea of the pyramid. So one person walks into a room, and that person is staying just one nightclub. He went to a couple of different places, so he wasn't there just one person. And you're in that room with the person, but you're nowhere near, you're probably on the other side of the room. You were probably infected only because that person was the one in the room. And then it just kept spreading through the rest of the room at night. You're in close contact, it's heavy breathing, you're dancing, you're excited. And that's an example of how you can projectile out your respiratory fluids much further in a high level of activity. And it just moves very quickly. So asymptomatic spreads is real, very real. And I think we can't discount that. So when you see, you know, other people in public gatherings or not, then you have to really think about what are the chances of someone in there just, you know, by daisy chain, essentially, infection inside minutes. You know, I brought up my colleagues today about Sweden. Sweden has not instigated lockdown. I know that it's been used as an example by a number of people who are wanting to reopen and claim the lockdown is false and this is fake science and things like that. But Sweden has a couple of things that we don't do here. One, they have pointed the highest polling in the world of the people trusting their government. Their people have a very high faith in the government. Secondly, the government also issued very similar orders regarding social distancing and hygiene and guidelines like that. Thirdly, that country has staff rates 3,500, but it's a very small country. And it has the highest death rate in that geographic zone and the highest infection rate. The public is very aware of that. As a result, you see news clips of people gathering, which is not the norm. The statistics don't show that in Sweden. It's showing that people are now more than ever trying to keep away from each other because of the high death rate. They're paying it very rare attention and trust their government. So restaurant business down there, actually up there, geographically speaking, has a 75% decline.
Wow.
Because people on their own, being advised by the government of what's going on, has decided that the death count's high, infection rate's high, and we trust the government's health data, and we probably shouldn't be close to each other.
Yeah. Well, it's
So this is a kind of example of how you have a new one or two news clips, but you actually start reading up on what's happening on their health data, and you realize the infection rate is still going up, but the public on its own is trying to keep each other safe. And, you know, it's very disturbing when people kind of like twist this information and say, oh, look, you know, they're the ones that are doing this, right? I'm like, yeah, they are, because they're actually paying attention and listening to people.
Right. Well, it's back to what you talk about all the time, Jackie, is personal responsibility through this whole thing.
That's correct. Yeah. They're taking very seriously the people are dying around them. They trust their government, and that they are willing to make a personal responsibility to try to keep people safe because the death count's real. And they know the death count's not going to go down. It's still going to continue, but they're trying to manage it the best they can.
Right.
I mean, other people want to get out there and say, you know, government's wrong. Look at Sweden. Yeah, but they're saying the government's right.
Right. The only difference is the government's not telling them what to do. They're giving them the facts and letting them decide.
Pretty much, yes. Yeah. And they've had a high nursing home death like we have, the same problems, very same problems all countries have, very high deaths in nursing homes. So the government's very aware of that. And there's a lot of public anger. Don't get me wrong. It's not like the whole public's like happy, glory going with the government. Sure. The deaf home, the deaf in the nursing homes and senior facilities in Sweden has created an outrage in the public for the government to act.
Yeah.
And the government has been trying to run the balance act like we have here on, you know, continuation of strong advisories and enforcement when necessary, while trying to keep the economy open, and the GDP will shrink because it's inevitable. Everyone's affected by this, doesn't matter who you are. And you know, you're right, people trusting people to take personal responsibility.
So there's an interesting poll out earlier this week about if a vaccine were developed, only half the people polled would actually get vaccinated, which you know, I found interesting. And I don't know if you have any insight into that.
Yeah, vaccinations is interesting because it's a herd immunity thing you've been hearing a lot about on TV and science shows, and trying to not be a medical doctor, but the science of herd immunity is very simple. If you have enough people of immunity in a geographic zone, the person who is not immune won't catch it because everyone around it is immune. So if you got one person that's not immune and nine people that are immune, that means that one person not immune will never catch it because the other nine could never get it.
Right.
And a lot of people talk to these statistics how vaccinations are not necessary because of the fact that you don't have just such a low infection rate. So, well, I never got vaccinated, but I never got it, so it's not true. Well, it's only because everyone around you has that herd immunity, provides you that shield. So a place like England and Sweden and maybe to some extent the U.S. and several other countries are trying to figure out how to handle herd immunity, whether it really works or not. So whether or not you become immune and for how long after you catch COVID. This is the issue about vaccination. So the numbers are kind of tricky because you really have to kind of think your way through the whole thing. It's not easy math. If you look at people who are vaccinated and you get to a certain percentage, that means non-vaccinated people have a very low risk of catching it. The question is what percentage of people have to be immune, so to speak, that reduces the possibility of non-immune people from being infected. And right, that's a tricky number.
Yep. Yeah. And I think it also is reflective of, for some reason, a mistrust of the medical community and vaccines in general that has seemed to rear its head over the past couple of years.
Yeah, there's no scientific data that proves that. Peer-reviewed data is this kind of thing I think people forget about science. It has to be peer-reviewed, meaning that once you publish a report, you have to go through rigorous testing by your peers in that scientific community to review them and actually to substantiate and to replicate your results consistently. And a lot of the reports in COVID-19 has not been peer-reviewed, meaning that no other scientist has been able to replicate your report to get the same results independently. So this includes, you know, scientific observations. For example, astronomy is peer reviewed. You know, you have other astronomers have to actually show your math works, actually replicate, can actually find in the night sky that math works in your science. So it doesn't matter. It's all science in the world works this way now. And you know, there are folks that are very concerned that it causes these secondary effects, which are unsubstantiated. For example, you know, people think that, you know, the flu vaccine gives you autism. That is completely false. It's been proven time and time by medical science that is the case. And this COVID situation should make all of us think about the vaccine issue. And the high risk of infection, you know, well into 4-6% death rate, the 20% very serious condition, and then, you know, 80%, potentially almost 80%, very mild or very uncomfortable conditions, which can spread. Somebody who could be in the other severe or deaf category.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm one of those guys who thinks that you should trust medical science. If you don't want to trust the peer review system in science and you think you're smarter than them, then you should go get your degree and go get your scientific information peer reviewed, and then we'll talk.
There you go. Can we talk a little bit, Tacky, about some local issues? I know that your committee on Beacon Hill had a hearing earlier this week regarding school field trips, basically school vacations.
Yeah, we accomplished a little bit more a difficult Zoom hearing yesterday. Like we're doing in formal sessions, we're kind of tiptoeing, starting off easy and starting to move a little more complex. And we heard a bill yesterday through Zoom on refunding school trips, having tour companies refund your school trips. And we've also been working trying to make this stuff public, meaning that a way for the public to view it. So we put on Facebook Live for the first time. It took, no joke, it took us 10 minutes to get the glitches out of it. So
I believe it.
Delayed as we're trying to sync different technologies together.
Right.
We also was able to get to the House Representatives website. There's the recording for them to put up there. And we're going to try to continue this practice, provided the technology doesn't fail. For example, we had issues regarding the timing clock on Zoom. We couldn't get to display properly about actually taking the display of the person speaking, and it became impractical. So once again, trial and error. Anyway, so Representative Cutler had filed a bill to require that tour companies that do tours for school groups to refund all their money. And that failure to do so automatically constitutes unfair and deceptive practice under Chapter 93 of the Consumer Law. Well, not to nitpick, but a pandemic is not a deceptive practice because none of us here manufactured a fake disease to get out of the deal. Okay. So we had a little bit of a legal problem there under the law, under the proposed legislation. But the rest of the issue, putting aside the technical problems of the bill, the real crux of the question is refunds from tour companies to school tours. And you saw in the news that the Attorney General has got a $1.4 million settlement from ET Tours, was it, I'm sorry, EF Tours, to repay school districts for unable to deliver. The reality is that's one of the biggest ones out there. The vast majority of tour companies are very small. I think a lot of us have friends in the tourism industry. Mm-hmm. They're not big multi-corporate businesses.
No, they're mom and pop operations mostly.
Exactly. And they're the exception to the rule. EF is the exception. They're big. Most of us are not big. They're all little small businesses. So the challenge here is a lot of these type of school tours are booked sometimes 3, 6, or a year in advance. Yep. This includes like athletic events. You have your schedule set up for, out-of-state tours or championship games and things like that. That schools are trying to prepare for those things. And the contractual issues is kind of interesting because even though the tour agent sets up the entire trip, the contractual issue is actually between the consumer and the tourist agent in the airlines and hotels, with the consumer using the tourist agent as your intermediary.
Hmm.
So you're paying the tour company to act as your intermediary to engage other folks, such as the airlines, hotels, tour guides, museum, whatever, to act on your behalf to get that set up on your behalf. And when you pay the tourist, it's
like a travel agent, basically, right?
Yeah. Travel agent, yeah. Week 9 starting to get to me too. the travel agent takes your money to pay those groups off.
Right, they take a piece, obviously, for their service, but
that's how it goes. So you don't actually have to manage trying to pay five different groups. They will be doing it all, right? That's part of the convenience factor.
Right.
On a big trip. And when you book in groups, there's a lot of policies, for example. I mean, you can get different rates. You can, but there's a lot of it involves no refunds, the guaranteed delivery, and so forth. But for example, the airline industry doesn't actually engage your agent. The contract actually between you and the airline is the individual, despite the fact you bought it through the agent. The agent is not privy to that part of the contract.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of these agents will work on your behalf with refunds, changing flights, things like that, to help you out, because that's what they do. That's right. Their service. They want repeat customers. They want to demonstrate you're a good business owner. I mean, it's just in the good people. They just want to make sure that, you know, their customers are taken care of. But that doesn't mean that they're the replacement for the airline.
Right. Those have their own policies, airlines, cruise ships, bus tour companies, and, you know, what have you. They have their own policies. So how, does that exclude them from liability?
It may, because each entity has different contractual terms.
Okay.
That as a consumer you've signed up for.
Yeah.
There's also a federal component to especially the airlines. So, for example, in Germany, Lufthansa has been bailed out by the German government, mm-hmm. But they are not allowed to issue refunds by German law as a result of the bailout.
Hmm.
See, England is trying to resolve their airline issue, and Virgin Airways of Richard Branson, the super rich guy,
mm-hmm.
trying to get a bailout, but there's a lot of pushback regarding whether or not they should be issuing refunds or not.
Okay.
In the U.S., you know, we provide a $50 billion taxpayer assistance bailout for the airline industry. And, you know, the feds have required them to work to try to get customers back the money as part of these conditions.
Right.
And then, you know, but the airlines, I think everyone, there should be no surprise, airlines across the world are dying off right now.
Yes.
You know, like the Thai airline is, the government of Thailand is trying to decide if they want to bail out Thai airline or just going to let it die. No joke. I mean, these are decisions that are being made on letting a whole industry just drop dead.
Wow.
And the government's not even, they want to try to help them out or not. And it's challenging because obviously there's only, most countries aren't the U.S. We're huge, despite what anyone thinks, we're a big economy, we have a lot of resources, smaller countries don't have the same resource capacity.
Hmm.
So we're very fortunate, we would try to keep our industries going the best we can, but not everyone can do that. So.
Yeah. So is there something that can be done here at the state level, do you think?
Well, that's what we're trying to figure out, because yeah. The agent didn't do anything wrong, right? The airlines and hotels didn't do anything wrong, and the consumer didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
And this is an isolated incident. If this was an isolated incident, let's say there's I used the example of like the tsunami hit in Indonesia, India, Thailand, some 15 odd years ago. You know, travel agents, you know, would know there's an emergency. If they're a big travel company, have a lot of local contacts, infrastructure and emergency services get into play. They're trying to find their people's loved ones out there, and then they can work in this very singular location. That this instance, they have to deal with all of Europe, all of Asia, all through the United States simultaneously. And I think this is has not been really spelled out, but all those kids in Europe, they needed to come home, had to get back before the travel ban was in effect.
That's right, yes.
So travel agents across the United States were working furiously to try to get them back. And those travel agencies, I can't speak for all of them, but you know, some of these travel agencies ate the cost associated getting the kids back home. And it's not just one or two. We're talking about tens and tens and tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands, depending on the geography we're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, if you have a child that was overseas, you understand what I'm talking about. If you do not have one, you probably never heard of this before. So the solution is really kind of complicated, because not all the contractual agreements from the consumer are with the travel agent. It's actually with the airline or the hotel or whatever at the other end with the individual.
Okay.
And the agent tries to help them out in the middle. But if the agent tries to refund them their money, the money isn't there because it's already been paid to the airline, the hotels, and other
okay.
the other side. So they don't actually have your money anymore. And your contractual agreement wasn't with the agent. The agent was supposed to just do the job for you on your behalf with the airline. So the airline is your end contractual business.
Okay. And in some cases, you know, families absorb the cost themselves in order to expedite return to this country. So maybe they're entitled to reimbursement in the future too.
That's correct. I mean, this is kind of a very complicated conversation, as you just kind of made it. You have that aspect too of families had to do this themselves and can get recovery. And the federal assistance programs for the airlines does not apply to any of the other industries. I mean, travel agencies don't get any benefits from that. Yeah. The bus tour industries don't get anything from that. The hotels do not get anything from that.
Right.
That was strictly airline bailout. It doesn't help anyone else in the bottom of the chain. including consumers.
Maybe the airlines, you know, being magnanimous citizens, that would voluntarily reimburse.
I think they will. They're trying to figure out right now. They've been this is the problem. They've been offering credits to agents to their customers, and with an uncertain time of when we're going to be able to fly again. And the worst part about student tours, it doesn't work for them, is because your kid may be out of high school, and this was their high school senior trip this year.
That's it. Yeah, this is the last time they could do it. So, right.
So that credit may not be usable. So even though the agent wouldn't get the credit, it goes straight to the consumer. Mm-hmm. Your child may have a ticket credit, but life is so uncertain anymore. Right. That can you ever use it again? Right. That's why, you know, giving the cash back is important. That's why there's a degree of fear regarding the airlines, because they got this monster bailout. So why can't you afford to refund our money? And the feds have required them as part of the bail process to provide reasonable, you know, recompense for consumers with their tickets. So people should just keep going at them. And the trickier side is stealing things like Expedia, right? When you book on your own, you know, and you probably saw stories also on things like Airbnb, because mm-hmm. they have a problem with both the host, which is the person renting an apartment, and the consumer that can no longer use the apartment.
Yes.
Everyone loses here, because it's the person that's renting their home to you. The, you know, Airbnb gets a piece of the action, and you got the consumer who wants to use that rental. Right. They can't.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a similar problem with like wedding venues. People who have booked, you know, a year in advance and now can't have their wedding at the venue that they chose, and they can't have the photographer and the floors that they already paid for, and the transportation and the music. It's, you know, a myriad of issues.
Well, it's also rotating money, right?
Right.
I mean, when you have the wedding planner go out there, they've already put deposits for everything around them.
That's
so
right.
You can secure the floors, you can secure the DJ, you can secure the venue.
Yeah.
But those users, those businesses too, don't operate on cash on hand. It's rotating money. So for them to be a photographer with that deposit, doing another job as a photographer. But they're relying on the fact that they have this other job lined up so they can get paid again.
Right.
And this is kind of the so-called gig economy, where it's one job after job after job after job, lining up your entire business plan that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then same thing of big venues. They're seasonal. They know they have less business than certain times a year, but they plan their budgets that if they can keep this consistent business rolling, they can constantly make payroll, constantly make operational costs, and so forth.
Sure.
So COVID-19 has disrupted that entire cycle of the economy, where people need the next job ready as they finish the last one, so they can continue to keep the bills paid.
Right. Yeah. So just suffice to say, this is going to have long lasting impacts for we don't know how long, until for years to come, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm looking at a 2-year forecast. I mean, I'm, you know, my level of thinking in terms of working my committee and thinking about policy issues, I do understand is the immediate issue, days, weeks, mm-hmm. months, but I'm thinking 2 years out. And my committee oversees a lot of issues ranging from alcohol, the lottery, to the racetrack, to the licensed professions that are not medically related. I do have a tiny bit of the allied health guys, but in the boarding building regs, the elevator inspectors, so I deal with a lot of construction industry folks, and obviously do restaurants through the alcohol industry and others. So I'm already starting to think much more long-term, beyond 2 or 3 months. I'm trying to forecast out the next 2 years.
Sure.
COVID situation. And
yeah.
Science changes, and it makes it harder every time. Every time you learn new science, it changes how I think.
Do you think, Tacky, that the state lottery should go online?
Yeah, that's been a lot of conversation again, and I'm still not in favor of online lottery. I wasn't in favor of online lottery before this. Massachusetts has a top 2 or 3 lottery sales in the United States, with me competing against bigger states like New York and Texas. So we're extremely strong lottery. We've had increased sales every single year, despite the fact that people want online the lottery and sales only go up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, the lottery is in decline. We should get online lottery. I'm like, yeah, but you're going higher. Sales are improving. It doesn't make sense. And now, because of the fact that the lottery pays the cities and towns, that's a big chunk of your local aid.
Right.
That this is cry that we should, I don't know, have the citizens of Massachusetts gamble more to help your cities and towns in closing in 800,000 people unemployment, perhaps close to a million. And we all know that it's not the wealthiest of people to play the lottery. You know, we live in Quincy. We know our demographics, and we know where these convenience stores and bars are located. I mean, you know who your friends are to play the lottery. We're not talking about the people that have tens of millions of dollars on hand to play the lottery.
Right.
And we also have a new problem now. With the bars and restaurants closed, Keno is 99% bars and restaurants driven. Now you have an alcohol license, you're likely to have Keno. And with the bars and restaurants closed and them wanting to try to get to reopen, to take away their Keno business through online lottery is problematic. As we're discussing outdoor seating, changing how to do alcohol licensing for outdoor patio seating, local zoning change improvements. I mean, so many things that we're talking about how to change on the local level and the state level, how restaurants are allowed to operate. To take away Keno from restaurants and bars, where they get 5% of every wager made in exchange for online lottery, where you could sit your cell phone at the same bar playing Keno or other games, is very disingenuous.
Yeah.
You know, people who advocate, they want to save our businesses, but basically take a tool away from one of our challenged businesses right now. And I think that's not fair on so many levels.
Okay. We should talk a little bit about the federal census, which is still ongoing. It gets extended, I guess, till October. Is that right?
Yeah, we have October to fill out the forms. Okay. We're doing pretty well in Massachusetts. We're slightly above the average, about 61% plus in Massachusetts. Nationally, it's about 58% plus. Quincy's better than the average, but behind the state average.
Okay.
So we're about a half point behind the state average, and we can do better. We definitely can. Our neighboring communities in Weymouth and Braintree. Braintree's floating around 72% and Weymouth around 68%. So if you would like to be competitive about this type of thing, we're behind them and we're like a D minus. So we should definitely please remember to fill your census at 2020census.gov. Your number is very important to us to assure that we get our fair share of funding. If you want to be competitive and not to spill ill by neighbors, if you don't want our neighbors to get more, it's your job to help us to ensure that we get our fair share, or it's going to go to our neighboring communities who's getting higher census counts. So if you're a competitive person, think of it that way.
Yeah. We should make a contest out of it, a census contest or something.
The challenge is that we got to be better than Weymouth from Braintree, folks. So you're that kind of person, please encourage your friends and family to do so. Don't forget, it's not just you in the household. It's everyone in your household. Citizenship status is irrelevant. Age is irrelevant. If they're physically in your home with you beginning April 1st of this year, they count. So please remember that as well. So we're doing good, but we can definitely do better.
Okay, great. Anything else we should add today, Techie?
You know, once again, you know, please do your best to social distance and wear your mask. And I know everyone's very excited to get out. The weather's getting warmer. But please be mindful of those around you. I have no pride. If you're walking in my direction, I have no problem getting out of your way to walk across the street or make space for others. It's just not just a matter of courtesy, but also public safety. So, you know, please, you know, be mindful of folks around you as part of this, and obviously it helps us be safe and be well. But, you know, today is Thursday, the 29th.
Eighth.
Yeah, my days are blending. You know, today's a very nice, warm day. It's going to be really hot and humid tomorrow, and I don't know everyone's get to the beach and whatnot, but just because you're outdoors, you're not safe. Don't forget, the wind blows. And, you know, if you're in the wrong breeze, you can pick up something from someone else on a disease that's proved to sit on surfaces for up to 48 hours. So, you know, it's insidiously tough virus.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I think where you're seeing a resurgence in some areas too, where some of the restrictions have been lifted, it's all very tenuous right now. So it's kind of baby steps, walking on eggshells, you know, to see where we go.
No, I agree. And, you know, I thank people who've been doing great too on personal care and care of people around others. I mean, absolutely. You know, my love and respect goes to every first responder, every essential service person, every government employee, and the guys at the supermarket, the pharmacy, you know, state government, local government, federal government, still operating through all this, even though it's the delays and disruptions in service. The lights are on. We're on using the internet now. You know, trash is still being picked up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, working, and I think we take that for granted every day until you really think of what look around you, but all the things people do and not getting paid a whole lot of money to do it.
Yep.
To keep day-to-day operations going. And I've always been thankful. I'm still continue to be very thankful, but also thankful for people who are, you know, wearing a mask, social distancing, staying home, having people work from home if you're an employer as much as possible. You know, thankful to my staffers who's tolerated me through this entire process where I'm slowly losing my mind and have to deal with weekly staff meetings and different staffers up to 3 times a week on Zoom calls and phone calls and you know, and trying to communicate in a manner where I can do something in 10 minutes if I sit with you, taking a full hour trying to describe on telephone while we're just trading emails for the next, you know, 2 hours trying to figure out what each one's trying to say. So, I mean, the people business, everyone knows that. And it's very challenging for anybody who works with people, whether it be retail, restaurant, consumer business, service business. It's very tough for us to operate this way.
Very much so, yeah. So we have our utmost respect for them, certainly. And anything that we can do here at QATV to help, we will do, certainly. Thanks so much, Tacky.
Thank you, Joe. I'll see you next week.
All right, that sounds good. Be well.
Be well.